Idiot wind blowing in through the front door. Idiot wind blowing in from the back. Idiot wind blowing in from every crevice, every crack. Anybody wanna tell it like it is to each other? Like you would to a sister or a brother. It could be said, cosmopolitan style.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Tom Rosensteel, the founder and director of the Project for Excellence in Journalism. He has been a journalist for more than three decades, both as a media critic for the Los Angeles Times and as chief congressional correspondent for Newsweek magazine. He was also co-founder of the Committee of Concerned Journalists, and he and his colleague Bill Kovach have co-written Warp Speed, America in the Age of Mixed Media, The Elements of Journalism, What News People Should Know and the Public Should Expect, and most recently, Blur, How to Know What's True in the Age of Information Overload. Welcome to Background Briefing, Tom Rosensteel.
Thank you.
And in terms of the title of your last book, Blur, How to Know What's True in the Age of Information Overload, it seems that there's a overload. The wires are jammed now with reviews of Paul Ryan's speech from the Republican convention last night. And the preponderance of reviews, I don't think, are particularly good. But there's a sense that the fact checkers are working overtime here. What is this a case of the barn door open and the horses down the paddock, and the initial message that gets out is stronger than the subsequent messages attempting to correct the record?
Well, I think this is a fascinating question that is altered by the digital age. There's a quote from Edward R. Murrow from the 1950s that I think may have actually been attributed to Mark Twain in the 19th century first, which is that a lie can get around the world before the truth can get its pants on. I was on Twitter during Ryan's speech, and the first account that I saw questioning some of the assertions in his speech came literally within minutes. I was watching the speech in real time, and moments after certain assertions were made, there were tweets challenging or actually providing evidence repudiating some of the statements. I think we need to sort of see a sorting out process over a few days that also includes some opinion surveys to see whether or not the consensus is that Ryan's speech contained a lot of inaccuracies, or whether this speech was a success, or whether we are in some environment now where there's a blue truth and a red truth. I'm not overly nostalgic about some golden age of accuracy. And certainly I can cite you many examples from politics a generation ago or longer of politicians using lies and misdirection. So the question is whether or not there's a greater scale of that now, and whether the volume of information back and forth makes some devaluation of truth on some level.
So in terms of the role of a journalist, particularly those that were anchoring the coverage of Ryan's speech last night, when the speech is over and you have pictures of a rapt audience just enthralled by this, some people call him the GOP's Wonder Boy, I guess the journalists who are on must feel it's a little bit of a challenge to say, that was just a pack of lies, because they're going to come across as spoil sports. What kind of restraints are on them in terms of their ability to report honestly about their feelings, or do they have to sort of mediate and moderate their opinions based upon what they're covering, which is a convention full of partisans?
Well, I think that the television people have always been somewhat constrained, both by speed and by good manners. You are, it is different to be at someone's event and to be in the hall and to be amid the cheering. You're also on instantaneously. You may even have been situated on the floor or in a booth where your ability to do fact-checking may be a little more limited. And in the modern context of television, particularly broadcast, you're only on for a few moments before you're off the air because the parties have literally packed that hour so that the TV people don't have a lot of time to provide analysis. Most of the analysis I saw from television people was fairly, was I would say, sort of performance-based. It did I think it was a good speech, well delivered? So the fact-checking, to the extent that we see it, is now coming from different venues. There's a handful of institutions that are dedicated to fact-checking, like PolitiFact, which is part of the Tampa Times newspaper. There is factcheck.org, which is part of the Annenberg School and at the University of Pennsylvania. The Washington Post has a fact-checking operation. But these tend to be more text-based. They're not television-oriented. CNN at one time did have a fact-checking unit. That was run by Brooks Jackson, who now does factcheck.org at the University of Pennsylvania.
Again, I'm speaking with Tom Rosensteel, who's the founder and director of the Project for Excellence in Journalism. He's been a journalist for more than three decades, both as a media critic for the Los Angeles Times and as chief congressional correspondent for Newsweek magazine. He also co-founded the Committee of Concerned Journalists, and his most recent book is Blur, How to Know What's True in the Age of Information Overload. Well, we know that there's a fairly concrete and deeply held belief amongst conservatives in this country that there's such a thing as a liberal media. And I'm talking to you from the Pacifica Station in Los Angeles, and which is about as far left as you get. And I'm very skeptical of the very notion of a liberal media because Pacifica's voice is so small and muted to some extent by its own internal fratricide. But the long and the short of it is it strikes me as a well-worn canard that there is this great sort of liberal media. But it's a deeply heartfelt belief, particularly amongst Tea Party-type people. So again, I would think that would be a restraining factor, wouldn't it, that the so-called mainstream media, or as the lamestream media, as Sarah Palin likes to call it, how much are they restrained from appearing to be liberal because of this charge?
Yeah, well, there's certainly some element of what some people have called working the rest, complaining about the about bias in the media as a way of intimidating journalists from being critical, and that much of this certainly over time has traditionally been coming from the conservative side. What's interesting when you look at the survey data is that in the 90s and early part of this decade, it was conservatives who said that they thought the media was not to be trusted. In the last few years, the last three or four, in our survey data at the Pew Research Center, it's liberals who increasingly believe that the press is biased, and they're being influenced by the rise of a conservative press, which has gained force and gained audience on cable and radio and some other venues. I think the real question is sort of if there's been an attack on the truth squatters in the last 24 hours for attacking or criticizing Ryan's speech, are we in some sort of post-factual era? This is a new narrative that I've been hearing today, and I've certainly heard it before. I'm not sure that if you attack the press that you're trying to delegitimize it for all time. because the same critics who will attack the press when it's convenient to do so, I find often will enlist their support when it also serves their purposes. This is political behavior by partisans. My sense is that when you attack the people who say that you've been inaccurate or false in your claims as a political actor, what you're really trying to do is engender doubt. You're not making a systemic claim about fact checking for all time. You're saying, in this case, I'm gonna deny what you're saying, and people who are inclined to believe me won't be sure who to believe. It's a bit like in a lawsuit when one side has expert witnesses that denounce or counterclaim the expert witnesses on the other side. In the end, juries discount the expert witnesses because they disagree.
So again, Tom Rosenstiel, the founder and director of the Project for Excellence in Journalism. He's been a journalist for more than three decades, both as a media critic for the Los Angeles Times and as chief congressional correspondent for Newsweek magazine. He also co-founded the Committee of Concerned Journalists, and his latest book is Blur, How to Know What's True in the Age of Information Overload. There's also, before Paul Ryan's speech last night, there's been a lot of complaints from the White House and from Democrats about the advertising campaigns that Mitt Romney's been running. In fact, going back to his first TV commercial back when he was running in Iowa in the primaries, his first commercial essentially put John McCain's words in Barack Obama's mouth. The welfare waiver commercial has really got the White House fuming and had Bill Clinton try to refute the record. But a pollster for Romney, Neil Newhouse, has defended this, what the White House considers demonstrably false advertisements, saying, "We're not going to let our campaign be dictated by fact checkers." So is this just, you know, the idea that in politics it's a plague on both the houses, that the public tunes out, that once you make it a partisan to and fro, everybody's eyes glaze over?
Well, this is not a new tactic. I mean, fact-checking may be new. It can date it back to in the press to about 1990, and it's grown. Certainly it's grown in the last 10 years as the press no longer a sole gatekeeper over what the public knows, searches for trying to identify its value. And one of the things that journalists in the reportorial media believe is that their value is in helping authenticate for people what facts are true, what things they can believe, and which things they should see as untrue. But the idea that politicians traffic in untruth is in no way a recent phenomenon or a digital phenomenon. You can go back to Thomas Jefferson hiring slanderous journalists to attack Alexander Hamilton, although such an ancient example, I think, is too quaint. But certainly Lyndon Johnson famously attacked his first Senate rival, and when one of the aides said, it's not true, he said, "Yeah, I just want to hear the SOB deny it." To White House or aides to Richard Nixon in the selling of the president in 1968, talking about ideas no longer matter in politics, only image. Or during the Clinton years, people talking about perception is reality in Washington, or during the Bush year is a quote in a famous New York Times magazine piece anonymously saying that we're moving past the reality-based or fact-based media. It is in the interest of political consultants to claim to their clients and to the media that they can bend reality. I don't think they know whether they can or not. Michael Deaver famously claimed that the words on television no longer mattered if people saw the images that the White House constructed. It was only the images that that mattered. In fact, social science shows that's not true, that when the words and the images conflict, the audience doesn't receive any messages. There's a dissonance, and it sort of doesn't register on the brain. So the charlatans, not the charlatans, but the Svengalis, of politics always claim that their power is great. I don't know that human nature has changed that much over the years.
Well, just in the last minute, Tom Rosenthal, why not have a kind of ombudsman for the truth? You know, I mean, obviously the media has changed. You mentioned Lyndon Johnson. When Walter Cronkite turned against the Vietnam War, Johnson apparently said, "We've just lost the war." Such was Cronkite's credibility. Those days are over, clearly. Is it feasible to have an ombudsman for the truth?
Well, you know, the digital utopians would say we have that now, and it's the crowd, that our chances of getting at the truth is greater than it's ever been because we have so many sources. And it is true that you can, depending on who you follow on Twitter and social media, you can see very quickly when things are called out. I think consensus is harder. You mentioned Cronkite, who in 1968, after the Tet Offensive, famously came back from Vietnam and said the war can't be won. And as you say, Johnson thought, well, then I've lost the country if I've lost Cronkite. But that was probably a rare moment of a high watermark for the press, perceived as an arbiter. If you go back to pre-World War II, when you had multiple papers in every city, and papers tended to be partisan, there was a kind of fractious media debate. The papers in Chicago couldn't even agree on how to spell words because the Chicago Tribune decided it was going to simplify the English language. So there was a moment of a kind of homogenized media consensus and a high degree, incidentally, of trust in the press at that moment. I don't think that's coming back, and I think that we're going to slog over what's true and what's not in a way that we probably also did during the McCarthy age, during the 30s, during the 19th century. I mean, it's a very polarized moment in American politics. The media, I think, culture is abetting that polarization, but that's not the first time it's happened. I'm not excusing it, and I'm not happy about it, but we've seen this mess before.
Well, Tom Rosenthal, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
My pleasure.
Again, I've been speaking with Tom Rosenthal, who's the founder and director of the Project for Excellence in Journalism. He has been a journalist for more than three decades, both as a media critic for the Los Angeles Times and as chief congressional correspondent for Newsweek magazine. He is also the co-founder of the Committee of Concerned Journalists, and with his colleague Bill Kovach has co-written Warp Speed, America in the Age of Mixed Media, The Elements of Journalism, What News People Should Know, and The Public Should Expect, and most recently, Blur, How to Know What's True in the Age of Information Overload. We're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back talking about the $6 billion 2012 elections.
It's the money.